name is Professor Malcolm Richardson, and I'm from the Mycology Reference Centre Manchester, which is a large diagnostic facility that services hospitals and clinics throughout the UK. And in this lecture, I'm going to talk about galactomannan. Galactomannan is a biomarker which signifies the presence of invasive aspergillosis. The whole concept of biomarkers goes back to the early 1970s, where people realised circulating components of a mold-like aspergillus or a yeast-like candida could be used to try and monitor the progression of infection and, as has happened, the success or failure of treatment. So we're going to look at the some specific aspects of galactomannan detection, in particular sensitivity and specificity. So there are a number of intended learning outcomes, ILOs, and first of all we're going to learn about the expected performance of galactomannan detection. So this, as I've said, is a particular antigen of aspergillus, and as we'll see, it's not specific to aspergillus, it's a pan-fungal test, but in serum in different patient populations. This test, or this whole concept, can be used for other body fluids, as we'll hear about briefly, for example, bronchoalveolar lavage, BAL. And that really is the second learning outcome. The higher sensitivity is now recognised of this biomarker, galactomannan, in BAL for the diagnosis of invasive aspergillosis. And this is the setting where this test is really used. And also the potential value of the detection of galactomannan in other sample types, for example, urine. Okay, so what is galactomannan? It's a large macromolecule. It's a very important part of the mold of the aspergillus cell wall. It's very integral for the structure and the morphology of this particular organism. And it's one of many potential biomarkers that can be used for diagnosing invasive aspergillosis. Beyond fungi, beyond molds, galactomannans as a group are found elsewhere. For example, they're found in guar gum. It can form a gel in water. It's used as a thickener and a stabilizer in ice creams, cream cheese, and salad dressings. It's found in seaweed, and it's found in ice lollies or ice pops. So there's a little story behind this, a paper published a couple of years ago in the New England Journal of Medicine. Was an interesting case, a lady who had a stem cell transplant, and then very suddenly her levels of galactomannan rose through the roof, and of course it was immediately thought she had a very rapid onset infection caused by aspergillus. So she was put onto the drug voriconazole, but very quickly somebody realised that she was eating probably 10 ice lollies a day. So it was the galactomannan in the thickener of the ice pop of the ice lolly that was contributing to this false positive, to this galactomannan signal in the ELISA test that's used to detect this particular macromolecule. And in the past, we've recognised the fact that some formulations of antibiotics, for example, piperacillin tazobactam, the actual excipient, the formulation, contains galactomannan, but I think by and large this has now been overcome. So, as I've already hinted, galactomannan is produced by a whole range of agents of hyalohyphomycosis, including Penicillium species, Tauromyces or Penicillium arnefii, a common environmental mold like Pistillomyces, other environmental molds like Cytomium, but also, as we'll touch upon very briefly, Histoplasma capsulatum and Fusarium species. So just bear that in mind. This is not specific to Aspergillus or Aspergillus species. And we know, for example, surprisingly, that Aspergillus flavus produces less galactomannan than Aspergillus fumigatus. And as we've said already, it can be detected in disseminated histoplasmosis, but that's the topic of another lecture. So, it's worth remembering these, that false positives are frequently found in children, especially in neonates, where we find very high levels of galactomannan in their serum, and this is because of various dietary factors, but also the presence of this bacterium, Bifidobacterium. Patients with multiple myelomas, it appears that up to 30% of these patients have galactomannan, and we're not sure why that is. As I've said already, these formulations of some antibiotics, but also in stem cell transplant patients, especially after the resolution of neutropenia, and patients who are undergoing enteral nutrition. On the other side of the coin, we have false negatives, patients who whose specimens are hemolyzed in situations where we have hyperbilirubinemia, solid organ transplant recipients, and also the presence of anti-aspergillus antibody, for example, IgG. So there are guidelines for everything, for all fungal infections, the diagnosis and treatment, and here I've just taken one table from the recent aspergillosis guidelines published by the European Confederation of Medical Mycology that was published in Clinical Microbiology and Infection last year, and we can see here the sort of level of evidence suggesting whether or not this test is any good. This is based on a lot of publications now over the last 20 or something years, so there's a lot of data to analyse and to summarise, as has been attempted here. So if we look here on the left-hand side of the slide here, we have the population, typical populations where this test would be used, patients with neutropenia, prolonged neutropenia, whether or not there are mold active prophylaxis, patients who've got various forms of hematological malignancies, but also patients in the ICU and patients undergoing solid organ transplantation. And we can see here the intention, of course, is the same, to use this test to try and diagnose invasive aspergillosis. So the intervention is the test itself. So here we're talking about blood samples, serum samples, and we can see here the levels of evidence, the strength of recommendation and the quality of the evidence. So the strength is basically a scale that we use, A being the best strength and B being the worst strength, in fact no recommendation at all. And the quality of evidence is a proper sort of randomized trial right down to expert opinion or abstracts that have been presented at various meetings. So here we see the highest level of support recommendation here, an A1, and the highest, this is the important point now, the highest test accuracy requires two samples with an optical density index, so the test generates an index of 0.5. And then we go right down to here, a very low level of recommendation in this particular patient population on mold active prophylaxis. That's not surprising, you're suppressing the level of fungus, that's the idea of prophylaxis, so you're going to not see high levels of galactomannan, and so on and so on, and you can see for yourself the levels of recommendation in these various patient groups. So there have been many meta-analyses, and here is quite a big one that examined 27 studies, so this is from 1996 to 2005, and there have been some subsequent to that, and I've given you some of the key references here from which this data is taken. And we're looking at the sensitivity and the specificity of this test. So here we have the patient populations, and we can see here the sensitivity, and this ranges from 22% in solid organ transplant recipients right up to nearly 90% in patients, pediatric patients, bone marrow transplant patients with malignancy. And we can see here, in most cases, quite respectable levels of specificity. So the key question, as I've alluded to already, is the impact of mold active prophylaxis. So of course in many of these patient populations that we've looked at briefly, mold active prophylaxis is going to be used. So in our setting here in Manchester in the UK, posaconazole prophylaxis is extensively used, especially in paediatric patients, haematology patients. So it's not surprising that the presence of levels of posaconazole in the circulation are going to reduce the utility of this particular test. So regular screening during neutropenia is not cost effective because of this one factor and others. So the diagnosis may yield positives if there is a breakthrough. So suddenly the organism can grow in the presence and it starts to invade tissue more and more in the presence of prophylaxis. So this is what we call a breakthrough infection. but less confidence in negatives. So we can, of course, we can compare this particular test with other biomarkers, and there will be further presentations on glucan detection. This again is a pan-fungal test, and also molecular tests like PCR. And so there's a lot of data here, and this is taken from a very useful paper that was published a few years ago with one of our colleagues in Cardiff in the UK in clinical infectious diseases, and we can compare the Galactomannan ELISA with the glucan test and also with PCR. And the parameters here are shown on the left: sensitivity, specificity, the positive predictive value, the negative predictive value, and so on and so on. So a lot of figures to look through, and of course you'll be able to sort of look at these slides at your leisure. We don't expect you to take in all this information that's shown on this particular slide. So we can summarise that though quite usefully for you, that the sensitivity overall of Galactomannan 82%, specificity 92%, glucan in this particular setting, invasive aspergillosis primarily, is not so good. And also the range of sensitivities for aspergillus PCR varies between 77 and 88%, and specificity also not quite as good as shown for the Galactomannan test and the fungal glucan test. So, subsequent to this particular test being approved by both European authorities and by the American FDA, a lot of data was analysed for the approval process for the detection of Galactomannan in BAL, bronchoalveolar lavage. So, here are the risk groups where this type of specimen, this type of test may be useful. So patients on a medical ICU, patients who are being treated with steroids, patients who are suffering from chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD, or patients with influenza. Increasingly, we're now recognising that serious influenza is a very important risk factor for the acquisition of invasive aspergillosis. Transplant recipients, patients, liver failure patients, patients with acute leukemia and relapse lymphoma, patients with AIDS, and patients with chronic pulmonary aspergillosis, and also lung cancer with unusual features. So we can compare now the Galactomannan test in BAL and the presence of antifungal therapy. Does it really have any effect? So here we've grouped all many patients together under this heading, all hematological malignancies. So we see here that culture is not particularly helpful in the way in which it is used at the moment, though there have been some refinements in the way we culture this type of specimen. And then we see here, this is quite an impressive figure here, that 20 out of 20 patients were positive for this biomarker, Galactomannan, and PCR, slightly less. So, and we see this type of response here in neutropenic patients before antifungal chemotherapy, but zero positivity just 3 days after the beginning of antifungal chemotherapy. So in some ways this shows you the very rapid effect of antifungal therapy on the diminution of the Galactomannan signal. And then more data, but we've tried to sort of highlight the important parts of this data. So this is taken now from a paper published in 2012. Quite a large group of patients here, broken down into various types: transplant, leukemia, and not so many proven cases of invasive pulmonary aspergillosis. We have this term probable, we're not quite sure, we're sort of looking and waiting for more evidence, and then 56 possible cases. So these are difficult terms to understand, but they are used in the clinical setting. So we can look at the cutoffs, and we're not still too sure exactly what cutoff should be used, even though the kit insert itself by the company that makes this test suggests that a cutoff between 0.5 and 1. And we can see here, if you increase the cutoff progressively like this, up to 4, you're obviously going to exclude a lot of results here, and that is reflected in this, in these decreasing values of sensitivity, and but the specificity remains pretty much the same as you perhaps would expect. So, to summarise all of this, the index of greater than or equal to greater than 0.8, many labs, it seems to be okay, many labs, including our laboratory here in Manchester, uses 1. And we see here if the index is greater than 3, you retain this level of specificity, but if it's less than 0.5, this virtually rules out invasive aspergillosis. Some more data now. This is the utility of this particular test in ICU patients. So this is something we've begun to recognise over the last 10 to 12 years or so, that patients who are admitted into the intensive care unit may have acquired aspergillus from the environment, their home, the outdoor environment, or unfortunately it's now being shown acquiring this disease within the ICU. You can't protect these patients completely from exposure to a mold-like aspergillus. So a lot of this work has been carried out in Belgium, and we can see here this particular study, quite old now, just over 100 patients, out of this number of just over 1,000 admissions assessed in a number of Belgian intensive care units, there were 26 cases of proven invasive aspergillosis. So this is tissue biopsy positive, culture positive, clinically suggestive of invasive aspergillosis. So this is using the ERTC MSG criteria for proven disease. And we can see here Graptomannan detection in BAL, 88% for sensitivity and 87% for specificity. Just less than half of the BAL samples were culture positive, but this very much depends on the way in which these samples were cultured. We know from our own work, the more of the specimen that you culture, the greater is the level of recovery. But serum GM negative in 100%. So the strategy that's come out of this work and more recent work is do a quick bronchoscopy and a BAL within 24 hours of admission for GM. And this seems to be the most efficient means of diagnosing this disease in this particular patient group. In AIDS patients, not a lot of work. It's not a disease that we recognise that much in AIDS patients, though it does exist. And we can see here the levels of specificity and sensitivity here, or positivity for serum and for BAL. What about other samples? We focused on serum or blood, and we focused on BALs, pleural fluid, pericardial fluid, cerebral spinal fluid, urine, and there are now some point of care tests being developed for the detection of a galactomannan-like molecule in urine, but that's a subject of another lecture. Tissue extracts you can prepare, sputum, but here we're talking about a much higher cutoff, maybe around about 6. We don't really know, but some work again we've done here in Manchester suggests that a cutoff around about 6 might indicate infection as opposed to colonisation. Aspirates and food, of course. But just remember that this test is not validated, is not approved for any of these specimens, both here in Europe and also in the United States. So here we have, again, from the recently published European Confederation of Medical Microbiology guidelines, the recommendation for the use of this particular marker in other body fluids. And well, we've discussed this already, BALs, but here we have lower levels of recommendation based on the quality of the evidence. So little data on other specimen types beyond BAL. And then we can compare again, there's a lot of data here, but I've given you the reference. This is worth having a look at. How does this test compare with other tests? And we can see here molecular test, Graptomannan test, culture, using a combination of cutoffs, combinations of tests. And of course, this is not a new idea, but perhaps it's best to use PCR and Galactomannan and other tests like culture. So we can see here the levels of sensitivity and specificity, but also this very important parameter, the negative predictive value. Can you use this sort of test or tests to rule out the possibility of disease? And then finally, it's been recognised that there's a degree of cross-reactivity between Aspergillus and other molds that we've discussed and histoplasma, the cause of histoplasmosis, Histoplasma capsulatum in particular. And here we have a study from French Guiana, and we can see here the level of cross-reactivity between Aspergillus and histoplasma. So this test, but the summary here is, the bottom line is, this test can be used for diagnosing histoplasmosis. But of course there are many tests specifically formulated, designed for disseminated histoplasmosis, which will be the subject of another lecture. Also, this disease, tularemycosis, so this is what used to be called Penicillium marneffei, it's now called Tularemyces marneffei. This is found predominantly in China, but also in Vietnam and in Thailand. We can see here quite respectable levels of sensitivity and specificity if a cutoff of 1 is used. So, finally then, how do we interpret the results? Just to summarise all of that information that I've given you, it is fast, hour and a half for the actual duration, run time of this particular test. It appears so far to be the most sensitive way to make the diagnosis of this disease, but as we've seen, unfortunately, false positives and false negatives occur, so always ask a lot of questions if you get a very high value in this test. Questions about diet, antibiotics and other factors which may impact on the result. Highest diagnostic performances in the Bavage fluid, the BAL. It is useful if we detect lactamanine in serum, but often falsely negative, and that's not surprising, and possibly has a use for diagnosing disseminated histoplasmosis and tularemycosis.